9/11, 20th anniversary. You were there.
I was.
And for you, in your neighborhood, can you tell us a little bit about where you lived in New York? And it was early in the morning. You would have been just getting up. You might not have even been up. And just take us through what happened that morning. What do you remember?
The funny thing was, and I normally am a late sleeper, but I kind of thought that I might be called in to supply teach that day. It was September 11th. It's a little early to be called in, but I thought I better get up just in case. So I got up, and I'm watching the Today Show, and we're living in Brooklyn. We're probably about 5 miles as the crow flies from the towers. And I'm watching, and all of a sudden what everyone saw, I see the plane hit. And I thought, okay, I have thought this is going to happen. I have flown over those towers so many times. It's a flight path from Toronto, and somebody has accidentally gone into the tower. Oh, my God, I hope nobody's hurt. My instinct was to call my school secretary just to let them know, because you never know, parents might have family there, whatever. As it turned out, they did, as did one of our custodians. His wife was there. Mind you, she escaped. So then I'm watching in disbelief and thinking, oh my God, I hope they can get people out. So as it unfolded, you're saying to yourself, how did this happen? And I hope there's not too many gone, and I hope they can get out. And then, of course, the second plane hit. And then we know this is not an accident. This is an attack. This is unbelievable. And it's just total disbelief. My husband came home at that point from his morning job. He was a school bus driver in New York for 38 years. He had gone out early in the morning. He came in. I'm telling him what happened. He proceeded to go out for his jog against my wishes. And he's normally going over the bridges. The closest bridge to us is Williamsburg Bridge, which is about a mile away, and that goes right into Manhattan. At this point, there are sirens nonstop off our balcony, because it's a main road that goes right to the Williamsburg Bridge over to Manhattan. We're maybe 3 miles from the Brooklyn Bridge, and we're another, if you go north from where we are, we're another maybe 2 miles from what they call the Queensboro Bridge or the 59th Street Bridge. All bridges, of course, were totally blocked. All emergency vehicles got priority. And people were running out of Manhattan, literally. I had called the school, and of course, they had no knowledge when it first happened. And from what I understand, they started getting calls from parents, and they started getting kids out if the parent could pick them up. On the news, of course, you're hearing stories about schools in the area of the Trade Center. You're thinking, dear God in heaven, what's happening with those children? As we learned later, there were parents that did not know the whereabouts of their children for maybe 10 hours because the children were evacuated west of Manhattan on the ferries over to Staten Island. No communication. Because in those days, sounds like a long time ago, it is 20 years, cell service was also governed by aerials, I think, on the trade centers. And when the first trade center went down, there was no more TV. I think I had one station because it was on the Empire State Building. But there was no more TV, and many people had no cell service. My husband came home. He said that he had gone to the Williamsburg Bridge in his jog. He had stood there with lots of other people in amazement and saw one of the towers fall. I can't remember which one at that point, the time frame. He came home. He knew he had to go back to work because he had to go pick up children. And I just thought, what am I going to do? What should I do? It was getting smoky. You have to picture Manhattan as an island, of course, and access on and off is either by subway through tunnels roadways through tunnels under the rivers or bridges, and everything was blocked. He went back to work, and I just paced, and I thought, I need to go talk to somebody. I have a friend who lives in my neighborhood, and I went over to her house. She had just heard, probably this is around 2 in the afternoon, I'm thinking, she had just heard from her son, and she was so thankful. Her son's a court officer, or was at the time, and he was a court officer in Lower Manhattan. And again, she hadn't heard from him, and then she finally did, and she was grateful. He was very shaken up. When he did get home, he was covered in soot. He, like many, had helped people escape, make their way, and like many people, were just completely in shock. Now, later that afternoon, and I'm a little fuzzy on this because it could have been the next day. If you picture downtown Toronto, or even downtown Sudbury, where the stores are all connected, you just, you know, you walk from store to store, and it's outdoor shopping. And so in my neighborhood were pictures. I guess it was the next day. The pictures were of loved ones that were missing. And, of course, on TV, all of us saw, everywhere in the world, saw the pictures that were going up near the Trade Center of people missing. But this was the local people missing. One of our local restaurant, Italian family that, you know, the mom, pop ran the restaurant. The kids worked the restaurant. I remember their son working when he was probably about 12 or 13, bussing tables. And he, you know, grew up and he was working on one of the top floors of one of the buildings. And they never found him. They never had any trace of him. That was unbelievable. Another little store on the avenue, we call it the Avenue, it's Manhattan Avenue. There were people that had a variety store. They were of Middle Eastern descent. And their son was an ambulance attendant. And he was missing. There were other people's pictures that I didn't know. But it was astounding that in our neighborhood, just our neighborhood, and you think of the size of New York, that there were so many people. I don't know if it was the next day I found out that one of my good friends, and she had just retired as an aide in our school, Dolores. Her son's a fireman. She had 3 wonderful sons, and this son, Carl, was a fireman. And they hadn't heard from him. And of course, through, you know, word of mouth, people were terrified that he was gone. He was, I think, about 25, fairly newly married, no children, and was among the missing. Fast forward to November 2001, I'm walking down the street and I see Dolores. She's a bit little older than me, so at the time she's probably around 75, or maybe 65. She had retired. Lovely person. And if you ever watched Archie Bunker and saw the wife, whose name just escaped me, with the accent, the Brooklyn accent, Edith Bunker. That was the accent. So I hadn't seen her. This is early November, and I thought, oh my God, what am I saying? What do I say? I just give her a hug. I just give her a hug and just, you know, try not to cry. And she's got the biggest smile on her face. And she's walking up to me. And she always called me Patty. Patty. The news, they found my Carl. And I'm dumbfounded because I'm thinking, was he alive? But I didn't say it, of course. They found my Carl, and he was okay, meaning intact, and he was with 6 of his buddies, 6 of his firefighters. She was smiling from ear to ear. The funeral was in a few days, as there had been funerals every day. There had been funerals every day from September 11th. It was just amazing. And so the funeral was local, so of course I went with other friends, and it was supposed to be for certain hours, but the line was out the door around the block, and it was extended. And it was a closed casket. However, as people had said, that she was so happy that they found him intact. Another teacher friend of mine, her best friend, her husband was a firefighter, and they never found a trace. It's just, everybody knew somebody. But when you think of a city of 8 or 9 million at least, it seems like everybody knew somebody. We can't ever forget. It was an attack. It probably shouldn't have happened. There probably could have been more precautions taken. Hard to say, of course, because we're not privy to that. But it sure changed America. It changed Canada. It changed the world as we know it. It changed the airlines. My mother was in Toronto and was scheduled to have some cancer surgery, actually. I was going to be up there for it. I believe the scheduled date was September 30th for the cancer. No, maybe it was the 15th, September 15th. So my other sister from Massey went down to be with Mom. I couldn't get up, and I wasn't able to fly up until, I think, mid-October. And even then, going to LaGuardia Airport in mid-October was empty, completely empty. Like a movie, like something had happened. And that was mid-October. And we won't forget.
I appreciate the memories and how difficult this is. Because I remember, of course, it as well. As a Canadian, watching and being terrified of the fact that we see our neighbors possibly at war. One of the interesting things that came out of that was how Canada opened its arms to these people. I don't know if you knew anyone who actually got flown into Gander or Toronto or anything like that, but your perception as an American as to how Canadians reacted, can you give us a little bit of insight into that?
Well, of course, watching documentaries on the Gander airport and redirecting all the people from America. I'm not even sure if there were people from Europe. At any rate, a lot of flights were directed. It's a fantastic story. It's a wonderful, heartwarming story. It didn't surprise me at all, learning about how the people of such a small Canadian city band together to feed people and house people and give people clothes and make them feel comfortable and welcome and safe, and did whatever they could, actually way beyond what they could, what anyone could imagine. I think it's obvious that we have the obvious connection of Canada and America for so many years. I mean, it's just a borderline. We are same people in the sense that we come from the same ancestors, and most people come from the early people that ventured their way to North America. And Canada has always been a very giving and loving country. Peacemakers, and it was Canada and America, World War I, World War II, and now even Afghanistan.
Over the last 20 years, I'm going to say your neighborhood has taken steps, as always, remembered 9/11. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of how that has taken place over the last 20 years?
Well, the one thing that I do recall, and it took many, many children a long time probably to get over that fear because of that day. The school where I taught, it's a 4 stories and very, very old-fashioned building, built probably 130 years ago. And you're on the 4th floor and you can get a view of Manhattan. We always could see the World Trade Towers from the 4th floor. They're in the classroom in the morning of September 11th. And suddenly, I'm imagining, because I wasn't there in the classroom, the teachers are panicking, trying not to in front of the children. The children are gathering at the windows And this is what transpired. So it took probably years of trying to teach about 9/11 and honoring 9/11 on that day with moments of silence, but not dwelling on the horrible parts of the story. It would be maybe coloring for children in JK, coloring the flag, coloring people happy, coloring children playing. It would be something like that. For the older students, it was remembering and knowing, but not elaborating on the horror of the day. Many children had their own family stories, that I know. And in the neighborhood, of course, flags, which are very prevalent on different days, on Veterans Day, on Memorial Day, on July 4th, the flags are always flowing for 9/11. People's window store owners. There's one particular street that ever since 9/11, the whole street, the whole block has flags. It's really quite amazing. And I did go last year, and sure enough, they're still flying those flags in honor of those who were lost and those who were injured. So, and I think the police precincts, we call them precincts, so the police stations, they do a memorial. And of course, everyone watches the memorial that takes place at the World Trade Center site. And that's the way it is. We have to also remember that we lost people at the Pentagon, too, and we lost people in Pennsylvania. As the story unfolded that day, it was just, we didn't know. Nobody knew. I'll tell you one thing, because we're kind of in between Kennedy Airport and LaGuardia Airport. So there's always planes. It's just nonstop planes. We can stand and watch them one after another from my balcony. And you just get used to it. I've never known New York to be so quiet. It was eerily quiet that day, except for the sirens of the ambulances going into Manhattan from everywhere. From on all the main thoroughfares getting to the bridges. So it is a day to remember.
Now that the memorial has been built, it must be really awesome to see that light shining up into the sky. I mean, you're that close, you'd see it.
Yes.
What kind of feelings does that evoke for you? I just imagine it, and it just brings tears to my eyes.
I'll tell you, I'm going to be honest, it gives me mixed feelings. The new World Trade 1 is a fantastic building. It's a completely different shape than the original buildings. It's a gradual sphere at the top, and it is magnificent. It is the landmark for that area. But I also miss the World Trade Towers. When I first went to New York as a visitor in the 70s, and the World Trade Towers had been recently built, and I got to go to the top, and the lovely cafe, bar, restaurant, whatever it was, Windows on the World. And it was amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. It's the view. I mean, just going to the top of the Empire State Building is amazing. But when you went to the top of the World Trade, it's like being up in outer space. But those two twin towers, just the fact that there were two of them and they were such a landmark. When I used to fly back and forth, my mom and dad were in Toronto with my sister and with a lot of health issues. So I did a lot of flying during, I always say I should have had American Airlines stock. I flew back and forth a lot, and it was just a flight plan, Toronto to New York and into LaGuardia. And you flew over, and if you were on which side of the plane, the pilot would say, well, if you go looking on the left side of the plane, you will see the top of the Trade Center. And it was amazing, because you literally looked and you're at the top of it. So when the first tower was hit, that was my immediate thought. I thought, there it's happened. They flew too close to the buildings. They should not have been so close to the buildings. Somebody's gone into the building, because I flew over it so many times, saw the top of that, the Twin Towers, so many times. I feel as though, yes, we made a completely new building. It's different. It's in the area. It's not in the footprint, to my knowledge. The footprint is the memorial, the footprints of the two buildings. I often think, and I think of people I know, like Dolores Bedigian, whose son Carl was lost. I think of them. Are they sad that the Twin Towers were not replaced, as is? Or are they feeling better about the fact that it's not the same? It's a brand new building, one building instead of two, and a different shape. That has crossed my mind. Maybe that's an improper thought, but it just, I thought to myself a few times, I wonder if we should have rebuilt the trade centers as they were, only, of course, stronger, as a memorial.